You are listening to a Virtually Speaking podcast.
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking podcast, episode number 46. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again back from Mexico is Mr. Juan. John, welcome back, buddy.
Está bien, Pete. Está bien.
Está bien? How was your trip, buddy?
It was great. It was great. And, you know, I went to a little island down there, you know, took it easy and then got back. And then this weekend went to Galveston to another island to go sailing. So I'm kind of on an island state of mind. We'll see. Hopefully I can keep myself focused this week on the show.
Yeah. Vegas, New Orleans, and then two islands. I think you need to stay home for a little while. What do you think?
Yeah. This travel's it's getting a little rough.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, John, I'm glad you're back for this one because this is definitely one of the areas that I know you love geeking out about. I think on this podcast in general, it is a virtualization and storage focused podcast, but I think we spend a lot of time a little higher up the stack, if you will, sort of in the application area. But this week, we're going to go a little deeper. We're going to talk about something I know you've heard before, NVMe, and how it might be possibly replacing SCSI. But before we get too deep into it, why don't we bring on our guest this week, Mr. Dave Edwards. Dave, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Dave, I know that you've been in this field for a little bit. Why don't you give us the 2-minute pitch? Where have you been? Where have you worked? What have you been working on? And what are you doing now?
So, thank you. It's great to be here. And I think where I'll start is where I am now, which is transitioning into a small company mode where we're looking to bring outsourcing into the U.S. based on our prior experience in flash memories. You know, way back when I started on chips. And then moved into SSDs, and I'm working with a number of colleagues here who have been in the same boat, working for Intel and Micron, and recently back to basics, working in SSDs. And one of the things we did not too long ago was we took a bunch of SSDs from Micron and threw them in a system and said, hey, I wonder how well vSAN would work with this. And turns out vSAN was fantastic with it. And
oh, yeah.
That was my introduction into VMware vSAN about 5 or 6 years ago.
Nice. And then so you started working for VMware.
Yeah, I started working for VMware doing, we're helping the cert team and the product management team to bring OEMs into the vSAN fold, you know, making sure that they have their hardware is compatible with and running well on vSAN and making sure it all goes smoothly.
So it sounds like you've worked, you know, full side of the stack, all the way from hyperconverged solutions consuming flash to designing on the raw, you know, flash and chipsets and things like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was involved with some of the Intel drives recently over the last five, six years ago, which have been released, you know, obviously since then. But and then way back when we developed a 35 megabyte flash drive.
Ooh.
3.5-inch drive IDE form factor back in 93.
Nice.
That was fun.
I remember IDE. That was like the ribbon cables, and you had to set it to cable select mode or master mode or things like that.
Yeah, and you had to have jumpers on your HBA so that you could have that proper address space so it didn't collide with something else. It was pretty cool. Not.
Yeah, exactly. The good old days. I cannot tell you how many of those little pins I broke trying to put that little piece of plastic on the right pin when I plug those IDE drives in.
Yeah, totally.
So do me a favor, help me a little bit. I know we're going to talk a little bit about NVMe versus SCSI. We'll talk a little bit about latency consistency, and we'll geek out a little bit more on some of the more nerdy flash stuff like 3D crosspoint or persistent DIMMs, etc. But tell me a little bit, very basic here. What is NVMe and why do I care?
NVMe is actually pretty simple. I mean, when we talk about our laptops of the old days, you know, where you actually lugged around that thing, inside was a hard drive. And usually it was what's called SATA protocol. And, you know, Intel integrated a controller called AHCI into their chipsets and made storage available to everyone. Whereas prior to that, SCSI was the predominant architecture, and you bought a, I think at that time it was Adaptec RAID controller, and you threw it in, you set your jumper settings, and installed a driver, and you were away you go. All of that SCSI technology, while the SCSI itself was a standard, the interfaces, the actual hardware interfaces and how the operating systems and the drivers interface with it were all proprietary. And that includes even SaaS architecture today. So with your LSIs and your, Adaptec still, the way that those controllers work is all proprietary. So Intel and Dell and a number of other big companies got together and said, well, how do we take storage and design it for flash? So they came up with the NVMe interface specification, and that's all it is. It's like AHCI or SAS on steroids. So instead of SAS just being a number of ways to communicate and then proprietary implementation, NVMe says, not only here's how you communicate, here's what the protocol looks like, and here you want to implement it, anybody can do it. It's free for all, free to anyone. And so it allows for standardized drivers. So your operating system can have one driver for all NVMe products. And that's powerful when you're trying to simplify management and simplify problems with drivers. And what it does is it allows you to optimize a device, in this case, an SSD, for everyone, for the use cases that Flash is really good at.
Okay. So this is actually being certified by SNIA or SNIA?
Well, so it's interesting. It's more of a de facto industry standard. So now SNIA, I believe, is a part of the consortium and whatnot. So they'll have NVMe things out there. I'm not familiar with their total involvement, but since it's a storage technology, you know, I'm sure they've got their fingers in there somewhere.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But you know, all those storage practices, you know, how do you precondition a drive when you're going to go run some workloads and do some performance benchmarking? You know, SNIA put together a lot of that stuff that doesn't have anything to do with whether you're SAS, SATA, or NVMe SSD technology.
When I think of them lately, I think of like the work they've done on like Swordfish or like APIs for more out-of-band control, kind of like the next generation of SMIS. NVMe, my understanding is, yeah, that's more an industry consortium directly working, and it's people like Intel and stuff like that
being heavily involved. Yeah, NVMe would just bolt in underneath that because you want to be able to, when you're connecting to your open standards management interfaces for your, you know, I don't know, inventory and all that stuff, you just plug in a new schema, and now you can talk to the NVMe drives and collect device information about those devices in the server.
Well, and is this looking to clean up some of the standardization problems we had with things like Smart, to where every vendor had their own implementation, and whether you started at zero and went to 100 or started at 100 and went down?
It's interesting. That is, NVMe took that Smart and they incorporated it into its heart, and they did some things that were great and they did some things that were not so great. Where on the Smart side, what they did is they call them log pages. And in those log pages, you'll find very specific metrics for SSDs, and they're designed for SSDs. Instead of, you know, rotational speed, it'll talk about PCIe version, right? They did some other things that aren't so great, such as making things vendor unique. So there's a standard way to get to the vendor unique information. That's good, but the information itself still has a bit of a vendor unique twist. The good news is that all of the solid state drive parameters that you don't get out of Smart are there in NVMe.
So endurance or remap or remap cells or things like that that you
would
care about.
Block error counts, you know, those kinds of things. Yeah.
Okay. So that's pretty cool. Now, I've heard NVMe is a lot more about operations being parallel. We've got a lot more lanes. Can you kind of explain why that's important of, you know, in comparison to SATA or SAS, you know, in terms of how queues are things?
So with SAS and SATA, since the interface between the device and the, let's call it the device and the HBA, it's a standard protocol. It's either SATA or SAS, and there are SCSI specifications around those. The interface between the HBA or the RAID controller and the host is all proprietary. So how they send commands, how they package them up and spread that work across CPUs is proprietary. So, one time an LSI and Adaptec would perform greatly different because they had a different architecture for how to feed the HBA or the RAID controller with the data. With NVMe, what they've done is they've said, hey, let's take the best of all those worlds and let's design it so that a Intel Xeon with 20 cores can service 20 cores worth of of IO to this device and get extremely high IOPS and extremely high bandwidth. Typically, you get your bandwidth from your PCIe, right? So, you know, 8 lanes of 3.0 is a significant amount of bandwidth. Your IOPS comes from your ability for your CPU to deliver IO packets and respond to the completions quickly. So what NVMe did is said, hey, let's provide an ability to have a queue for each core of the CPU and then make the interrupt go directly to the core so that that core can handle everything about the IO transaction. And every core can be involved as the operating system wants them to be.
Oh, that's nice.
So the end result here is a lot of cases people have low CPU on a workload and things were bottlenecking on storage. Now we should actually be able to do more compute, hopefully make the CPUs busier because we can in parallel deliver to all the cores at once, as well as just cut down a lot of interrupts and overhead.
Absolutely. And the other thing they did is instead of having to send IO transactions directly over the IO bus, I don't know if you're familiar with Intel architecture, but there's an IO bus and then there's a memory bus. And the IO bus is typically run on a separate clock, which runs significantly slower. So with AHCI and some of the earlier, you know, proprietary SAS architectures, they had these register sets that were sitting in IO space. What NVMe did is they moved it into DRAM space. So all of your structures and all of your queuing is all done in a data structure like you would in a linked list program, you know, back in computer science 101. And then the interaction with the IO bus is very minimal. It's called the doorbell. And so you set up your structures in memory and you say, hey, doorbell, ding, I'm ready for you to go parse. And that's something that the SAS controllers figured out eventually, and they started doing on their own proprietarily. And they found that the performance was fantastic. So the more you move out of IO space, the more you moved into DRAM, the better performance you got out of the system.
You know, this conversation about trying to do as much in-memory computing, it's a general trend I'm seeing with applications trying to shift the working data set to memory. Because it's just a massive, you know, exponential increase historically in latency, but, you know, going through that IO bus, going to that traditional, even fast flash storage, versus being in memory. And any way we can get that path between IO and memory, that's going to let us just do infinitely more, I guess, with these processors.
Absolutely. Because your applications are going to be putting their data in the memory. Why copy that data to another memory location or put it in a temporary location? Just, you know, get it straight to the device as fast as you can.
So is this something that applications now that this can be so much more performant and take advantage of your processors and ultimately have better IO, is this something that applications need to be redesigned to work with NVMe, or does this just happen under the covers?
Well, it happens under the covers. And if you look at a Linux or a Windows architecture, they've been able to plug it in pretty seamlessly. And so, you know, you don't even know you're talking to an NVMe, but you do see an extremely efficient and amazing latencies because you're avoiding a lot of part of the stacks. Obviously, with the Windows architecture and even a VMware architecture, you have some SCSI translation to do. So it's a little harder to get all of the benefit. But if you go to a Linux setup, that's where you're going to get the most performance because they've made it so that you can bolt the NVMe IO space directly to the block IO path. So you can bypass all of these software layers if you want to get the ultra performance.
In some cases, kind of my understanding was they were looking at using this almost as an extension of memory, kind of like how mainframes had persistent memory back in the day. That seems there's kind of this discussion about byte versus block addressable even for some of this stuff.
I think that's when you get into the whole persistent memory and NVDIMM space, where what they're doing is they're trying to say, you mentioned it earlier, we want to get the transactions as close to the CPU and DRAM as possible. So if we can eliminate even the PCI bus as a bottleneck to getting that data out there, Then the only place to go is DRAM, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, PCIe 3 is slow and adds, you know, 100 nanoseconds of latency, which in the memory, I mean, yes, that's incredibly low and lower latency than, you know, even modern networks. But if we can go even lower latency than that 100 nanoseconds and cut that out and go straight to memory, we can go a lot lower.
Exactly.
So then why do I hear people say all the time, oh, this storage vendor is going to be able to handle NVMe and this one's not? If it's something that's, is there any work on the back end for storage vendors that need to do anything to support NVMe?
That's an excellent question. We talk about that quite a bit around here. I think the way I describe it best is you have your legacy storage folks who are your SAS, SATA, mostly SCSI architecture.
Yep.
And they've been doing SCSI systems with RAID and block-based, you know, solutions, virtual disks. Everything is done at a RAID level or a block level with SCSI protocols. And when you get into the NVMe space, NVMe is nothing like that because you've basically ripped out the HBA and said, yep, let's throw that out and let's plug the drive directly onto the CPU, onto the PCI bus. So now instead of the controller interacting with vendor one versus vendor two, now you have the operating system and the kernel interfacing with those different drives. So typically the HBA vendors and the RAID vendors had their own qualification lists and their own testing because they knew they had to be compatible across a large number of devices, and they hid that from the operating system. Now that all gets exposed up to the operating system. And the shift is now when it breaks, your system blue screens or purple screens, or you have strange behaviors that could be directly affected by the vendor that implemented the NVMe specification.
Sure.
And that spec, like any other, is open to interpretation.
There are these concepts of NVMe over fabrics. I even see some of the fiber channel, you know, vendors saying, hey, we're going to keep doing fiber channel, but we're do it over, use NVMe as our transport protocol instead of SCSI. Is this something that, you know, we're going to see wide scale adoption of this? Is this trying to put lipstick on a pig, or, you know, bolt a jetpack onto a dinosaur? Is this a good idea? And what is it that people are wanting to do by taking NVMe, which I associate with a PCIe device attached locally and stretch it?
It's interesting you mentioned that because it kind of ties into your last question about, you know, a vendor one versus vendor two and how well they might adapt to an NVMe architecture. And what we're seeing is that, you know, the traditional storage market still exists, right? And they want to either keep SAS going or they want to merge and migrate to NVMe because that's what the vendors are making. You know, solid state storage is taken off like wildfire. And if you look at who's making the drives, it's the flash vendors, because for a no-name company to go and invest in making a controller and then buying the flash off the open market, it's not cheap. So these vendors that make the memory are, you know, investing in NVMe. Because for an NVMe new guy, SAS and SATA are a lot more difficult, actually, because they're in the old world. They're in this new world of more DRAM-like interfaces and fast. So this whole notion of adding SCSI and SCSI compliance and stuff just escapes them. So NVMe over fabrics is a way of saying, let's take the legacy storage architecture and let's plug NVMe into it so that we have a business that can continue and then can transition the old storage architectures. And I'm trying to think here. The best analogy I recently heard was NVMe over fabrics is kind of like ICER, which is RDMA over networking, because you're actually not wiring systems together across PCIe. What you're doing is you're taking Ethernet, whether it's 100 gig or fiber channel, the transport doesn't necessarily matter. What matters is the ability to do remote DMA between servers so that you could have a box sitting out there that is either a JBOD, but they call them JBOFs for just a bunch of flash, where you can carve out LUNs and just like you would SAS, and then direct those virtual LUNs to a physical host and be able to RDMA it over a network, whether it's fiber channel or Ethernet. And that's where you get into the RoCE versus iWarp discussion.
I heard RoCE's winning that, right?
So. That's what it's looking like. And I'm not real up on all of the who's got what and who's better or not yet. I'm still trying to read up on that.
RDMA converged over Ethernet versus iWarp, which I never remember what that stands for, were the competing standards for doing RDMA transport over Ethernet, correct?
Yes. You know, the nice thing there, say for vSAN, is that if they get RoCE support over iSCSI or whatever fiber channel, I guess I think vSphere supports fiber channel and iSCSI, then the transition to NVMe over fabrics is pretty much done.
Yeah, that's the thing with RDMA, because that will basically allow you to do that memory channel transport. What's cool for that from an actual applied, you know, reality of moving to that RDMA transport over Ethernet and bypassing the CPU is latency, because you can shed on your HBAs, I think, might add normally 150 nanoseconds. You can cut that down to a third that or less. I think there were some cases of even 50 down to like 7 or 8 nanoseconds on some devices. So it's orders of magnitude reduction in latency, as well as CPU overhead. The CPU is no longer involved, so you're not wasting clock cycles and adding latency that you don't want. So,
and then you add optimizations into the network interface, and now you have even better latencies or better scalability.
What's interesting with all of this crashing together was, I remember a couple of years back, Intel had this architecture they were proposing called rack scale architecture, to where we were going to have JBoffs. Which JBoff sounds like the name of a band, like Pete and the JBoffs.
Pete and the JBoffs, come until you live.
Seriously.
Yeah, at the seafront. Like, you know, it's like Pete and, like, you know, some shady looking characters on drums or something. Maybe that's the name of Chuck Hollis's band or something. But no, so we're at this point to where, yeah, you basically have just a bunch of flash as top of rack flash. You do PCI networking. I think they're proposing LightPath or something. But the idea is you have high speed networking in the rack, and then from that top device, you would break out and then go back to your traditional Ethernet or you know, longer range protocols. But the idea being is that you get that latency super low to that shared pool of flash. You have super low CPU transport, super low latency, and then you do lots of processing, and then you basically, then it goes back to a more traditional protocol when it leaves the rack.
Yeah, and I think the other interesting thing about the rack scale architecture is, you know, field replaceable units. You know, you want to upgrade your CPU, pop in a new one and you're done, right? You're not changing your backplane out. If you need to update your flash, you pop out the flash and replace it. So there's some interesting things with just the replaceability. You know, it's kind of, you know, a blade/modular architecture on a different scale, right?
Well, yeah, it reminds me of HP, kind of what they were working on, the machine, kind of that evil plan. And you're right, it's back to blades, but in a much more modular way, to where, I don't know, it's like we're building a disaggregated x86 mainframe or something. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, a big blade, right? You know, a rack blade, if you will.
Rack scale, but...
Yeah, and I think it's because... You have your different needs. You need a huge scale out, but you may not want all storage or all compute. Or every customer deployment is just different enough to require a slight modification. And this gives that big scalability with some of the flexibility that the field replaceable units and that blade-like architecture provides.
It's interesting because we've been talking about software-defined for a while, and a key component of all of these things getting faster is the operating systems, the hypervisor, you know, vSphere, as well as, you know, operating systems being able to pass that through, and even apps in some cases supporting persistent layer. But the hardware is really mattering, and we're seeing, you know, Ethernet getting pushed to the extremes. We're seeing light peak sneak in. We're talking about PCI Express switching starting to rear its head in some niche circles. I think the hardware is about to get a lot more exciting, and servers are going to look a lot less like they have in the past 10 years.
Well, it is. And the other nice thing is that we're talking about off-the-shelf components, too. So theoretically, mix and match. Now, obviously, that doesn't always work, which is why you need certification programs in place.
Oh, yeah.
But and to test, right? Do your pilots.
Yeah, and there's money to be made with this, right? So people are going to start to come out with, you know, we have a standardization. People are going to start selling Array certified for NVMe, and there's going to be all different types of cards, people selling cards. So my question is do you think this is the next big thing? How quickly do you think people are going to really start to adopt this new NVMe technology?
Well, that's interesting because, you know, NVMe is the new interface for solid state. And spinning media, forgive me, I'm a flash guy. Doing it for over 25 years, the spinning media is dying. It's going away. It's the new tape,
oh, yeah,
in my opinion. And NVMe is the way to reduce the layers of software and to get the quickest way to path to the flash. And all of the storage vendors and that are out there that are making flash drives and SSDs, they're the ones who decide what your interface is. And if they can't deliver SAS, then they deliver NVMe or SATA. But personally, NVMe is awesome. A storage interface that says, hey, let's optimize this for 20 cores running IOs in parallel, and then mapping things into memory and making it easy to reduce the software overhead is awesome. And we haven't even scratched the surface on the capabilities, because now we're being more limited by the software stacks than we ever were.
Yeah, that was something I saw some latency chart on NVMe a while back. I think it was an article on AnandTech. I think the slide may have even originally come from Intel. And they were showing the latency, you know, on like a TPC or benchmark, and how much of the latency was driven by the app stack versus the storage stack.
Yeah,
with NVMe, and as we get rid of all the serial I/O queues, as we in the OS and in the hypervisor and in the hardware stack, and we have these brilliantly parallel, super low latency, we're gonna have to. It's gonna take new generations of applications that know how to leverage this. And in the meanwhile, while we were waiting on NVMe, a lot of apps have tried to just work off of DRAM, and we've got in-memory databases, HANA, and things like that. But there were still limits of what you could stuff into RAM. I mean, you can only get a host with so many gigs of RAM, and RAM's expensive. So I think you're right. It's going to be interesting to see the app developers learn to take advantage of this stuff.
Oh, absolutely. You know, on the non-volatile DRAM front, you know, that's the next emerging form of storage, right? And NVMe isn't necessarily the answer for that, unless you're going to RDMA between hosts in their, you know, DRAM, right? Which theoretically could still be done. And NVMe, since it's just sort of a way of saying, hey, I got a bunch of data, go do something with it. And then, you know, RDMA is a way of saying, go put it here. I mean, the possibilities are endless, and NVMe is just the surface, in my opinion.
Yeah, but we're going to need operating systems and platforms that can support that. I mean, that yes. can support disaggregated clustering, and we're bringing yeah. back the open VMS clusters here. I mean, I don't know, but
are we shifting the bottleneck, because it's no longer depending on the storage?
That's always the game. Is shift the bottleneck or arbitrage one resource for another, right? So
yeah,
I like it. Don't blame the storage.
It's gonna
to
be,
me, anything that can do that has got to be a pretty cool spec.
that's indeed fun. So I mean, where is SCSI is basically going to linger around for legacy places where performance doesn't matter, or someone hasn't bothered to clean out the code queue, you know, yet. And then
the other thing we are seeing, if you look at some of the later NVMe specs, is some of the SCSI concepts are bleeding into NVMe. I mean, reservations. There's some value in there, especially because of software stacks. And you'll see some of those things creeping in, and they'll do their best to keep them out. But there's some value in a standard that's been around for decades. And they've thought of things that some newbie folks may not have thought of.
I guess stuff like unmap for page reclaim, or yes, SCSI 3 persistent reservations for clustering support, things like that. So,
yeah,
well, that's fun. So, yeah, and NVDIMMs, by the way, just architecturally, because I know Pete's not quite as into the hardware as I am. correct me if I'm wrong, but that's where you take a normal DIMM with DRAM memory and you make it persistent so it can survive power loss, typically by attaching a capacitor and some type of persistent device, correct?
Yes. So you'll see, like, the current generation is you see a big old super cat board or a battery wired off to the DRAM slots. And it's very expensive, right? Because not only do you have your normally expensive DRAM, you also have your super caps or batteries or whatever, you know, you can afford, or whatever you can fit into your little chassis there. And that's where 3D XPoint comes in and changes the game, because you take what you normally like to have with your flash drives, and you make it DRAM speed on the DRAM bus, and no super caps required.
Yeah, and 3D XPoint's interesting, because when it was originally being heralded, they were talking about these insane, it's going to be exactly the same as DRAM, and it's going to be amazing. And it's come out, and people seem kind of almost let down initially, but it's the first generation. Obviously, the capabilities of the product are still being flexed. I'm sure they're still trying to figure out controllers for them.
Well, not only that, I mean, you're still talking about a non-volatile medium that can be stored across power cycles. So yeah, there are some challenges there. But in the end, is once you get the data into it, the speeds are like DRAM. So, okay, you might take longer to write your data, but a lot less time than it would on the fastest NVMe drive. And then once you've got it into your store, you're reading at, you know, 2400 megahertz. That's pretty significant.
So the other thing to point here is, I guess 3D XPoint can do what's called, instead of block addressable, it looks like a block device, the OS, it can do byte addressable, to where it looks like memory. because it is sitting on a memory bus, and so it can be addressed in that same way.
Right, and I think that's where you're talking about the controller, right? Because the controller architecture for those NVDIMMs, it needs a personality. It needs to know, am I a block device or am I byte addressable? You know, and so you're right on that front. So the controller architecture there becomes more significant.
Well, it's exciting. Like, I mean, we've had this wave of flash taking over the storage arrays and taking over, you know, storage in the case of vSAN. But NVMe and all of these other associated technologies we discussed today, they're going to radically change, even more so than, I guess, the takeover of NAND. They're going to radically change the latencies and performance and what we can do with applications for analytics and other things in the coming years. So it's a fun time to be in hardware and software.
Absolutely. And you think of that, it's going to be ubiquitous. Instead of going to one vendor, you got choices everywhere.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It sounds like there's no longer a dependent upon one specific vendor. This is going to be, you know, available across just about any storage device. Bring your own device.
Absolutely.
I like this whole concept also, going back to, as a vSAN guy, I like the idea of getting fewer devices in my OPATH just from a stability perspective.
Oh,
we
absolutely
no longer have to go through RAID controllers, which were never designed to, you know, just be, they were never designed, you know, SCSI was never designed for flash. RAID controllers weren't necessarily designed for pass-through, something that had to be often added later as a support. And so just getting, you know, then you've got SAS expanders, which are these devices that are multiplexing drives out. There's all these things that sit in your IO path, and they're either going to add latency or they add one more support dependency that some poor guy has to test. So if we can instead just get our drives talking straight to the PCI bus, straight to the motherboard, straight to the CPU, that's a big deal.
Couldn't agree more.
Agreed. So Dave, this new job that you have, I know obviously it's going to be, NVMe is going to be part of your job. What are you going to be working on with NVMe in your new position?
That's a good question. Not sure how much I can publicly state, but enterprise SSD, both from some feature capabilities as well as some test automation. So those would be some services the company I'm working for will provide.
Okay.
And then anything that has to do with vSAN or building out solution space will either be cheap, affordable SATA drives or all NVMe, nothing in between. You know, this is a pet project of mine, but one of my favorite things to do with vSAN is take a single CPU, like say 8 to 10 core Xeons, throw vSAN on them and put 4 to 8 nodes in a cluster with a decent amount of DRAM, decent amount of storage. But the idea is not for massive compute or massive build out of storage, but for the reliability and the redundancy I get for a reasonable price when it comes to the hardware and the licensing.
Yeah, that whole concept of being able to scale out resiliency, and you know, once you add nodes, you've got that self-healing capability. It's interesting what the software can do on top of sufficiently fast hardware.
Absolutely, and you know, the big guys, yeah, they get that, right? They can afford to buy the licensing for the dual CPUs or 4 CPUs, and they get immense benefit from it. And I'm just thinking on the flip side with what the little guys, you know, those of us who are starting new companies and need our own services, we can still use those vSAN capabilities and those vSphere capabilities for managing and keeping our own services simple, but at a lower cost point.
Seen quite a bit of that.
Awesome. Well, I think that's about a good stopping point for now. Dave, I really appreciate you coming on, and I'm excited to hear what you do with this new company that apparently doesn't even have a name yet. It's a startup without a name. That's pretty, those are exciting times, my friend.
Absolutely. TBD, right?
Yeah.
And I appreciate you having me here. Thank you.
No, we're so happy that you came on. We look forward to seeing you at VMworld, and I'm sure we'll have some updates but when we see you at VMworld.
Awesome.
All right, well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. Subscribe to us on SoundCloud or iTunes by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. Next week, we're going to be talking to the big brains about vRealize Automation. And so until then, bye for now. John, we went deep, deep, deep. I had to get my scuba gear to even understand what you were talking about there.
Yeah, I try to break down some of the acronyms. If you need me to re-record any acronym breakdowns, I can do that. So.
Yeah, I'm going to have to listen to this one like 5 times just to fully absorb it.
Sorry about that.
No, that was good.
It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Storage is cool.
Enough of this jibber jabber.